Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello, this is Tim Reedy for the America Magazine podcast for the week of June 8th through 15th. This week we're joined by Dave Nantas, who flew in from Detroit. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Now, Dave, why don't you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
I'm Dave Nantas from Detroit. I teach at the University of Detroit Mercy in philosophy and religious studies, and regular contributor to America Magazine when I can.
Now, Dave has written about pop culture, among other issues, for us, and had a piece on the 50th anniversary of Motown. Also has a piece coming up on what might be tentatively called Detroit's patron, about Father Solanus. Am I pronouncing that right?
I think it's Solanus.
Solanus Casey, who is a up for canonization and it from Detroit. So you write a lot about the city of Detroit in different ways, music, also the spirituality, the church life there. So I thought we could talk about what the mood is like in Detroit, obviously very much in the news right now. So you can just kind of describe what, you know, what the mood's like there.
In one way, it's a sad, depressed mood because of the auto industry and the decline in money, finances. The big three for so long, for the last 50 years, have been doing things in basically one way, and it's worked. Even when foreign competition started ramping up, the big three were still able to maintain a large hold of the market. As everybody knows, probably recently, a lot of that came crashing down. GM and Chrysler both approached the federal government for loans. The federal government turned around and said, you know, you need to clean up house. And when they did that, they cut a lot of people. So there's tens of thousands of people who are losing their jobs, who are still losing their jobs now. It's not over yet. A lot of them end up moving out of Southeast Michigan because the unemployment rate in Michigan is will probably be about 13% at the end of the year. So there's not a lot of jobs to take the place of those auto jobs.
Yeah, we're just getting a taste of it now on the East Coast because we're seeing these dealerships that are, you know, getting these notices that they have to close. But this is a situation, obviously, that, you know, the Midwest has been dealing with for far longer. What is the church doing there? I mean, how is it getting involved in helping to support these people who are going through these difficult situations?
Well, there's a couple of things I'd say. One is there's a lot of programs to help those who are out of work, you know, retraining, things like that. We have a new archbishop now. He's come out with a document about the unemployed and asking people to keep hope and keep their faith that God will be there for them. So that there's that message, which is one of support and faith and hope, and that's a good sign. But at the same time, there's a lot of church and school closings going on in the Archdiocese of Detroit, which is very sad. Right now, in a city of almost 140 square miles, there are two Catholic high schools, and there used to be hundreds, and both of them are run by the Jesuits. There's actually a new Cristo Rey school that will be opening up. So that's a positive note. But a lot of the schools and churches are closing and moving out to the suburbs, and the urban sprawl is a big problem. It's hard to you know, deal with that tension between all of the resources going out in the suburbs and a lot of the city continuing to be depressed. A big difference now, though, is that the suburbs are feeling it. A lot of the people that commute in to General Motors, which is right downtown in Detroit on the river, they're losing their jobs. People in any of the suppliers that supply the auto industry in the big three, a lot of those jobs are being lost as a result too, and a lot of those people are suburbanites. So everybody's starting to feel it, and perhaps because of that, maybe one positive thing that could come out of that is that we see that there is no divide there. For so long, there's been this big divide between the city and the suburbs. Suburbanites, I mean, we don't want anything to do with the city and its poverty, but now everybody's suffering. So hopefully that could bring about some cooperation.
Now, President Obama has spoken, you know, obviously he's intimately involved in the restructuring of these auto companies. But I just tried to sound positive notes about the future of the auto industry, that, you know, if, you know, the auto industry should be able to make a great hybrid, a great electric car. Is there some hope among, you know, the auto executives, the people who live there, that this could be a solution, or is it still kind of still a dark time there?
There's a lot of hope. The problem is the amount of time it takes to, you know, retool a plant in order to do this kind of work is, even in, with today's technology, it takes a while. And so people are wondering, what can we do right now? Because my house is being foreclosed on, you know, next month, and I don't have a job. The governor of Michigan, Jennifer Granholm, she's a big supporter of, you know, green energy and green jobs, and she's really doing a lot to try to bring in other industries besides the auto industry to sort of, you know, look to the future and to say that, you know, Southeast Michigan used to be the auto capital of the world, but maybe we need to rethink that and say we should be able to do something else too that's just as important for the world. So I think there's a hope that these things will happen. There are at the North American International Auto Show this past year, the Chevy Volt was unveiled, an electric car, hopefully to be available fairly soon. There's talk about, you know, hydrogen fuel cell cars and other alternative forms of energy. So it's definitely going to happen, and it's good that there's some pressure being put on the auto industry to make it happen sooner than later. But in the meantime, there's a gap that isn't being filled, and that's where the problems are.
Now, we're talking here in New York, where there's a lot of talk about the TARP bailouts for the finance industry, which dwarf what money's been given to the auto industry. Yet the bailouts of the auto industry have aroused a good deal of, you know, populist anger and, like, why are we bailing these companies out? Why don't you just, you know, this is a capitalist system. What would you say? I mean, what argument would you make about the bailout? Is this, has been a good thing for the companies? Is you know, bankruptcy, as difficult that is, ultimately the answer?
Well, you know, about in the 70s, probably about 30 years ago now, when Lee Iacocca was at Chrysler and they needed money from the government, he cut his pay down to $1 a year. He did a lot, he made a lot of signs that the company wanted to change, the company wanted to do better. And I think because of that, public opinion was very favorable at the time. And especially when Chrysler repaid that loan in full plus interest, that was also helpful. Now, I think a lot of the fear wasn't about the amount of money. Obviously, as you mentioned, the banks have so much more money from the government. But because I think some of the quality of cars that people have driven in the last 15 years have not always been that great. And so they say this is just inevitable that someone that puts out a bad product is going to have financial problems. I don't think it's fair to say that the big three have put out only bad product for two decades. There's been some amazing vehicles that have come out. But there could have been more done on alternative fuel vehicles. There could have been more done on negotiating with the unions, for example, to help control the healthcare costs, which puts about $2,000 into the cost of each vehicle because of all the healthcare that the auto companies have to pay for current and retired employees. So there were some mistakes they made, definitely, down the road. But I think it's unfair to criticize them as them being the major problem in the United States now.
Now, you bring up the question of the unions, and I think this is worth discussing because, you know, the church has long been a strong, stalwart supporter of unions, you know, from the time of Leo XIII. Yet the unions, especially the car unions, have been criticized for, you know, what some people see as excess, or, you know, that they've got this kind of sweetheart deal. How do you balance that? Because you look at states, you know, like South Carolina, which have a car industry that is not unionized, yet the employees seem happy, or because they have jobs, which they didn't have before. Yet here, you know, you think it seems only fair to give people a living wage, to give them health care. Yet if it's going to compromise the future of a company to make a profit, that causes a problem. You know, how do you deal with that issue?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one because you don't want to come down against the worker because that's who is building the cars. And as people have said over and over and over on the news, especially the, you know, big three supporters, is that this was the beginning of the middle class in several ways. You know, the middle class in America was created in large part by the auto industry. You know, you can go all the way back to Ford's $5 day, which was over twice the amount of money that most workers were receiving at the time. It's a big issue or a big tension there between the unions and administration and, you know, the executives. I think one thing is there has to be more of a spirit of cooperation. I think a lot of times, at least in my view of it, a lot of times people are going to the table with this very tense and a lot of animosity towards one another, assuming that one is going to cut down the other, or try to get something for free, instead of saying, you know, how can we give you a fair package and how can we encourage you to build a good product? That's a lot of back and forth that has to happen. I don't think it's the union's fault, though, that a lot of times they received a really nice deal from the big three. A lot of it was during a time when Detroit was the auto capital and there was no foreign competition. And so the money was there to do this. So I wouldn't fault them for being able to be good negotiators. But now that there's a struggle, I think a good Christian response is, how do you cooperate so that the most number of jobs can be salvaged at this time? Which means that both sides have to be looking at what can we give rather than what can we get out of this.
Yeah, that's essentially what I was getting at, is that, you know, coming from a Catholic social justice tradition, you know, you want to support the worker, but you're in a situation here where, you know, the benefits given to workers are compromising the ability of this business to keep jobs. So you're in a very difficult spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully, I think the unions have made some concessions, and that will help the big three, especially GM and Chrysler. I know Ford hasn't taken any money from the government yet. They said they don't need it, and that's wonderful. But the other two, they've talked to the unions. The unions have made concessions, and I think they see eye to eye in many respects on that.
Now maybe we can turn to, you know, you've written about Motown music. That's one example of the vibrancy and the culture of Detroit as a city. Now that, you know, Motown is now 50 years old, but you live in Detroit in the city, even amongst these difficult times. What is the culture like? You know, what is growing there now in terms of music or theater or another area of the arts?
Well, one thing now, actually this coming weekend, is the Detroit Electronic Music Festival. And people who are electronic music aficionados point to Detroit and actually Berlin as being the two cities that were responsible for the birth of this type of music. And the biggest names in that subgenre come from those two cities. People will literally come in from around the world for this festival this weekend downtown. And it's exciting to see all of these people converge on the city, and it certainly helps economically, but it also helps when people come and they see that what they hear through rumors, or maybe they see on the news certain parts of the city that are desolate, now they see a part of the city that's actually vibrant and living, and a lot of people are enjoying it rather than just the burnt out, you know, desolate landscapes that often you see on the news. There's a lot of good local bands as well, people that haven't sort of made it yet, but it's a very vibrant scene. You can go to a number of clubs throughout the area and see great music almost any night. And, you know, about things like the White Stripes coming out, Eminem, Kid Rock, it seems to span all genres. There's a number of different artists that are up and coming there. I think part of it is there's a really gritty nature about the city, and you have to be creative in order to make something happen. You have to be a good entrepreneur no matter what you're doing in order to make something happen, because it's not as obvious as, you know, downtown in Manhattan, Chicago, San Francisco, where you could just show up and not know anything about the city and have a great time. In Detroit, it's you have to know what's going on, or you have to know someone that does. And in that case, you can have a wonderful time. You can see all this culture going on. So I think, you know, one of the things is the music. Another thing is because there's so much vacant land now, it's about, the city geography is about 2/3 the size of Chicago, but there's only there's less than 900,000 people in a 140 square mile piece of land. A lot of vacant lots that are now hopefully being converted to urban gardens. That's a big movement now. So that's a good creative way of how can we use this land. So I think there's a lot of smart entrepreneurial spirit going on. And in the neighborhood I live in, Midtown, which is near Wayne State University, lots of college students. You'd think it was, you know, at some nights you'd think it was like an Ann Arbor or something like that, where there's a vibrant young culture there. So there are these wonderful pockets of development and culture that are exciting to be a part of.
Well, it says something that you've chosen to live there, you and your wife. I mean, most people, you know, 20 years ago would have probably just headed out to the suburbs. But for you, you know, it was important to be in the city and part of this culture.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, that's where my parents are from, and they have a history there. And even though I grew up in one of the inner ring suburbs, I did go to high school, to a Jesuit high school in Detroit. And I think, you know, that experience of being in the city for school really helped me set aside some of my prejudices about urban life and see that this could be exciting.
Now we're going to end by talking about an article that is scheduled to run in the June 22nd issue, although that can always change, but it will be running soon, which I said before is tentatively called Detroit's Patron, which is about Father Solanus Casey. Did I pronounce that, mispronounce that again?
Yeah, it's Solanus.
Solanus Casey, yeah. I'm sorry. Maybe you can introduce him to our listeners.
Oh, sure. Father Solanus was a Capuchin Franciscan. He was born in Wisconsin, but he did most of his ministry in Detroit from the early 20s until the mid-40s. And then he actually came back in the mid-50s, and it's where he passed away. He was known as a very gentle and kind man. People came to him for counsel all the time. He started gaining this reputation, and people referred to him as the holy priest because they felt in his presence there was a holiness about him. He would tell people sometimes that they needed to pray more, so he wasn't afraid of giving direction to people, but he was gentle and he was kind. One of the reasons why Solanus is so famous in that city, though, is a lot of the reported miracles that occurred, people being cured of diseases. One story that I write about in the article is my aunt, when she was an infant, being brought to Father Solanus because she had a skin condition that was irritating her, and they couldn't figure out how to cure it. And Father Solanus prayed over her, and soon after that, she was cured of it. So there's a lot of lore and stories about Father Solanus and his life. He also started a soup kitchen that's still running today. He started it during the Great Depression. And right about now, and the reason I was intrigued and decided to do a little more research into him and write this article was because even though we're not in another Great Depression, we're in the closest thing we have in the last 80 years. And people are becoming unemployed. People are turning to alcohol and narcotics to get over their pain, and not unlike in the 1930s when they faced these things as well. So I wanted to see, like, oh, how is the spirit of Father Solanus still alive in the city? How is it that he and his followers and his the people that admired him, how are they carrying on his legacy and helping those in need?
Now, he was declared by Pope John Paul II venerable in 1995. Right now, his cause for beatification requires one medically verified healing miracle. So that's where his cause stands right now.
Right. And I spoke to the two Capuchin brothers who are in charge of his cause, and they told me that they have sent over some documented miracles. And I believe a couple of them were turned down by Rome, but there's still others that are being considered. And so it's possible that he could be beatified soon. The exciting thing... Well, two exciting things. One is that it would be a great thing for the city of Detroit to have someone of that stature and religious holiness being able to be associated with it. But also, he would also be the first American-born male saint. So that's another exciting, groundbreaking thing as well.
All right. Well, we want to thank Dave Nantes for joining us. And if you're ever visiting Detroit, you should. Dave would be a great tour guide, so he can show you the hot spots. So, Dave, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you, Tim.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. Reminder, you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. Tune in next week when we'll have Father Jim McDermott, who will be talking about his tertianship, the final stage of his Jesuit formation in Australia. Thank Bill McGarvey again for the music he provides for this show. You can learn more about him at billmcgarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.